You're listening to The Drew Marshall Show, Canada's most listened to spiritual talkback program.
Have a little listen to Mr. James Taylor.
No, it doesn't seem to have a home. Left a fend for yourself in a wilderness. Out there living life all alone.
Whenever you're ready. Oh, man. It is a strange
giving up your faith in God, man. Listening to the beat of the world,
yeah,
leading you astray into the paths of degradation and sin. Yeah.
Gee. I knew that I was not going to be able to intro this guy properly.
Geez.
He says to me, "I'm sold. I'm still into Gaither. What is this rock and roll stuff you're listening to here from the pits of hell?"
Amen.
Dr. Campolo is a media commentator on religious, social, and political matters, having guested on television programs like The Colbert Report, Nightline, Crossfire, Politically Incorrect, Charlie Rose Show. By the way, I love that show, Charlie
Isn't that
Rose
good?
Show.
Isn't that good?
I like him. Larry King, I like Larry, I'm just not, stop.
Yeah.
Stop. His wife, Sean, sweetheart of a gal. CNN, Dayside, CNN News. Good night. Are we done here? Oh, the hour with Strombo. Like, Georgie likes you.
Yes, I like him. I like him a lot.
He's just a gem, that guy. I wish I could find someone that has dirt on him or something.
Yeah.
That would be a good thing. It helps if your mic's on, Tim.
I'm sure his mom does.
Yeah. His mom loves it. His mother listens to my show.
God does.
God loves George.
There we go.
What are you, Shane Claiborne?
I'm sure God's got the dirt, too.
Yeah, yes. That's what I meant.
If you were to say one thing to George Strombolopoulos' mother,
Yeah.
Is it Jesus' sandals or Jesus' sandals?
I don't know. I have, you're asking these profound questions.
These are the things we deal with.
Yeah, well, no wonder you're screwed up.
If you were to say one thing to Strombo's mother who listens to this show,
yeah,
she might be listening right now.
Yeah.
What would you say?
Keep praying. Keep praying. God's not finished yet. You know, it ain't, in the words of Yogi Berra, the great Christian prophet.
Yes.
It ain't over till it's over.
Beautiful. First Berra chapter 2, verse 3.
There you go.
Author of 38 books, only 38.
Yeah.
It's disappointing.
Well, you know, I've written more books than I've read. That's the reality of my life.
And
an unpublished thought.
Yeah. Well, sorry, I had too many comments there that came into my head. You and I chatted last week over the phone. You were our Droogle guest last week. We just had Bill Lobdell. I don't know if you've ever come across Bill, but great guy. Wrote this book, Losing My Religion, and, you know, he chucked his faith or whatever. By the way, let's get down to this right off the bat here. Can you chuck your faith?
Yeah.
Where do you stand at all? Are you Calvinistic? We didn't really have a choice to screwed?
I really believe in the autonomy of the individual. I believe that God created us to be free people.
Right.
So that's my position.
Okay.
You know, you asked a question last week.
Yes.
That I thought about.
Oh, whiz.
Sorry. And here it is.
Sorry.
You said, could you please tell me about a miracle?
Yeah.
I mean, that you've witnessed.
Yeah.
And you know.
No, now, did I say miracle? That sounds a little Benny Hinnish. I don't think I'd use the M word.
I think I
encounter,
actually.
Encounter, maybe?
Yeah, maybe that's it. That wasn't mystical, you know, that wasn't so subjective.
Yeah.
So, you know, when I was a graduate student, my major professor, really trying to put me down, like you are trying to put me down, said, Campolo, what I'm telling you is why don't you go out into the middle of Broad Street, which is the middle of Philadelphia, and build a big pile of wood, pour water all over it like the prophet Elijah did, call me and all the other agnostics out into the street and yell, rain down fire from heaven. If you really believe all this stuff, I mean, here's your chance. You know, put it out on the street, big pile of wood, douse it with water, call down fire from heaven. And I said, I know what you're going to tell me, that I'm not going to do it. And if I did it and nothing happened, I would say it wasn't God's will.
Mm-hmm.
He said, that's right. That's my point. I said, but what if fire did come down from heaven after I prayed, what would you say? And he smiled and said, I think I'd say there has to be another explanation. In other words, no matter what happens, even when a miracle does take place, I think that the person who is predisposed to disbelief will, in fact, discount it.
Is that me?
I don't know. I don't know anything about you except that you got a head like mine. You know.
You mean externally?
You know. Yeah. I mean, there's no hair on the. You know, you and I could put our heads together, bend over, and moon the whole crowd. You know, we could do that. We could do that.
Just maybe get tattoos that say.
The engineer here, he's no different. Do you have to be bald to come into this room?
Yes.
I wonder what the story
you're
is.
You're lucky your driver's in the
room. These are not bald heads. These are solar panels for sex machines.
Baby, you got it.
Okay, we got it down.
You know you're getting old when your wife yells downstairs?
Yes. Let's go upstairs and have sex, and you say, I can't do both.
Yeah. Ladies and gentlemen, Tony Capone.
Yeah, this is what it means to be spiritual.
He's here all week. Yeah. Enjoy the meal.
Yeah.
All right. So listen.
Yeah.
Give me this encounter. Yeah. Have you really had any encounters with God?
Yeah, but they're not very dramatic, and that's what you're looking for. You're looking for something dramatic,
dude. And excuse me if I call you dude. If Tony Campolo has not had an encounter with the Almighty,
I didn't say that. I said that they weren't very dramatic.
Well, let me have one.
I'm sitting alone in my office late at night, and I close my eyes and bow my head, and I sit there for an hour and a quarter, waiting to be invaded by the Spirit.
You were napping.
And here it comes. Nothing happened. I go home, and 3 days later, I get up in the morning, and I sit again for 15 minutes. And I feel this inflow of the Spirit. I feel myself energized from beyond. I feel something coming into me. So that's what I mean when I say I've had an encounter. I can remember one time I got up from bed and was alive with this energy that had come from beyond. I knew it had. I went down to get an airplane to fly to a speaking engagement in Chicago, and I got to the airport late. They gave me a middle seat between two fat guys.
Love it.
And they had already claimed the armrest. You know what that's like?
Yeah, I do.
But I'm wearing a T-shirt, and the guy next to me is wearing a T-shirt.
Oh, skin touching.
Oh,
skin touching.
I can feel his tension. I look over, and there are beads of perspiration. He's biting on his thumb. And, you know, I know my friends from Campus Crusade would know exactly what to say. Excuse me, sir, you're troubled. You need four spiritual laws. Here they are. I never can pull that off, but I did the next best thing.
Right.
I had, that morning, I had felt this inflow, this permeation of my personhood with his presence. So I didn't say anything. I just leaned on him. I know this is mystical, and I let the power flow.
This is witnessing through osmosis?
You call it anything you want. You see, you probably didn't get it when Jesus was walking down the road. Touched, and this woman touches the hem of his garment, osmosis.
Yeah.
And he stops and he says, what? I felt power go out of me. And if you dare say, but that's Jesus and not Tony Campolo, I will say that the scripture declares that the same power that was in Christ Jesus shall be in your mortal bodies.
Benny Hinn uses that same line of reasoning.
That's right. I don't know what to do with Benny Hinn. I think it's strange, but I don't know what to do with it. I have learned in my old age, and I am old. I go to weddings, and the bride's mother is, you know, looks
the good.
Bride's grandmother looks
good,
better to me than the bride, you know. I mean, I'm really old. I mean, my idea of a happy hour is a nap,
what
I mean?
Yeah, yeah.
But I mean, and I've learned to not pass judgment on people. Benny Hinn, what do you think of Benny? I'm not in no position to pass judgment.
And let's not get sidetracked with Benny and his jet.
Yeah. But let me tell you what happened.
Yeah.
So this guy, you know, I'm, as the plane touches down, I do something stupid. I say, God, if you want me to talk to this guy, give me a sign. Mm-hmm. I don't know. What am I expecting? The flight attendant to turn into an armadillo? I don't know. Show me something.
If it was with Air Canada, she probably already is.
No, sir, I said this. Then this guy turns to me and he says, Mister, I'm in trouble. I need God. I was looking for something more specific, you know? We go into the cafeteria at O'Hare, and for the next hour, I talk to him about Jesus, and he surrenders his life.
Were you reading a God book? Were you
reading the Bible?
Did you have a collar on?
No, I didn't.
Did you talk to him about God stuff at all?
No, I didn't say anything to him, except you're sweating. You know, I mean, God works in ways that you have an experience like that. Let me give you one more, since you're into miracle stuff.
Okay.
Or mystical stuff.
Yeah.
I'm in South Africa doing a pastor's conference, and some of the guys with me is part of the Toronto Blessing.
Right.
Yeah, I mean, you guys ought to know about that.
He says to me,
do you have a healing ministry? And I said, well, you know, do I pray for people that are sick when I visit them in the hospital? Yes. He says, no, I mean, do you have a healing ministry? I said, to tell the truth, I pray for people who are sick, but not much happens. He says, well, that hasn't kept you from preaching.
Oh,
that was a low blow.
Nice.
The next week, I'm in McMinnville, Oregon. Got this? And I'm up there preaching away in this Nazarene church. And underneath the pulpit, there's this vial of oil. You know, the Pentecostals and all those.
On a WD-40.
Yeah, there I go. I say, look, at the end of the service, there's this vial of oil. I don't know. If you'd like to stay behind for a healing service, I'll do a little healing service. Now, there are a couple of ground rules. Number one, I'm not in a hurry. I'm not Benny Hinn. I don't knock them over and they get up healed. Mm-hmm. I got to talk to each of you, and this will probably take some time. I need to connect with you personally. The second thing is, let me be up front. I really don't expect anything to happen. Lo and behold, about 30 people stayed behind. Most of them had no physical problems whatsoever. One guy was suffering from pornography. Another guy wanted his marriage healed. Several people depressed. That says something about the church.
Yeah. Did you just speak prior to that?
This was after the service. Yeah, they were depressed. No, they had this clinical depression problem. But there were some people that were sick. I prayed for everybody. Nothing happened. 2 weeks later, I get a call from a lady. She says, you prayed for my husband. He had cancer. I got past tense. Had. She said, he's dead.
Wow.
I said, well, one prayer from me. Not only don't you get the cancer gone, but you're out of here. Wow. She said, no, the reason why I called is that he was full of hatred. For the last 5 years, he's been full of hatred since this cancer began to develop. He wanted to see his grandchildren grow up. And he hated God. He hated everybody. Nobody wanted to be in the room with him, least of all me. You laid hands on him, and you prayed. I don't know what happened. But when he walked out of that church, he was a different guy. Hmm. The last 2 weeks were full of joy. I mean, we had fun. We talked. We had the great... I hated to go to bed at night. It was so good. And if I had to choose between the previous 30 years that we had and the last 2 weeks, I'd choose the last 2 weeks. And then she said this. He wasn't cured, but he was healed. Now, do you call that miraculous? I don't know. Psychosomatic, call it anything you want. Something happened to that guy. And... that's all I can do is bear witness to those kinds of things. I wish I could give you the Benny Hinn stories. I wish. I'm not putting down Benny Hinn. There was something that Benny Hinn said in an interview on television that impressed me. I think it was Larry King who said, if you got all this power to heal people, why don't you go to the hospital, simply walk down the aisle and
heal everybody? Yep.
Why do we have to take up an offering and pay you?
Mm-hmm. Good question. Answer?
His answer was, I can't. He said, you see, I don't heal. What happens is there's 10,000 people in the stands, and each of them is a lens through which the energy of God is focused on the person that I have in front of me. All of that spiritual dynamism flows from them into that person. I am simply the one that calls for them to focus on that person. It's God flowing through people, flowing into this person that does that. That was the first time I heard Benny Hinn ever say anything that kind of made sense to me. You know, because I'm a mystic. I don't apologize for that. I am a mystic. You don't even have to be religious to be a mystic. I am Buddhist or mystics, and they're not necessarily religious, right? I just sense this thing. But
Okay, ever in your life, because as a sociologist, you have this analytical mind, you probably think too much. Ever a time in your life with the dark night of the soul, crisis of faith stuff, or did you, when you decided to buy into the Jesus stuff, did God give you that extra spiritual gift of faith?
Mm. You know, I think I grew up with it, you know, which really calls into question the validity of my experience. You know, you grow up, you're socialized into a mindset.
Right.
How do you know whether what your experience is a socialization and nurtured into it, or whether or not something did break into your life from the outside? So they're the kinds of questions that I raise. I was lecturing at Dartmouth College, which is one of our Ivy schools down in the States, south of the border.
Where?
Dartmouth.
No, south of the border. Oh, the United Canadian, States of America.
The United States, right, right. Whatever you call it.
Yeah, yeah.
It's the 11th province.
Mm-hmm. Yes. Well, whatever you want to call it. Whatever you want to call it. We call it the Holy Land. At any rate.
Yeah, oh, man. Yeah.
So, at any rate, I'm down there at Dartmouth, and I finished the lecture, which was on sociology. But the word was out that I was a believer. And so when it was question time, this one kid stood up, snotty sophomore type.
Yeah.
Said, "Doctor, you seem like you have academic credentials to verify the validity of your presentation, but I have to say, how could somebody with your sophistication possibly believe the Bible?" And I said, "Well, because I guess I decided to." And once I made that decision, I began to construct arguments to support what I already believed.
Right.
Right?
Right.
And my whole life has been creating these flying buttresses that would support what I already decided was true. He said, "I got you." I said, "No, I got you. Why don't you believe the Bible? Isn't it because you made a decision and you have been creating flying buttresses to support your unbelief?
Yeah.
Isn't it true that we're both in the same bag? Please, don't get me wrong. You got me at a vulnerable point. There is no way I can prove anything to you. But please, don't tell me that you're a non-believer because of superior intelligence. You are an ideological victim. You created an hypothetical construct of non-belief and have built up intellectual arguments to support your agnosticism. And I'll tell you why." And he said, "Why? Why? Why?" I said, "Did your mother go to church?" "Yes." "Did your father go to church?" "Yeah." "I know why you don't go to church." He said, "Why?" I said, "Because you've been screwing around with girls. That's why." He said, "What's that got to do with it?" Blaise Pascal said something better than that
yeah,
wager.
Pascal's wager.
Yeah, that,
yeah.
Something
that's
better.
That's nothing compared to this.
Here's his real power.
Here we go.
He says most. He didn't say all. Most unbelief comes from disobedience. What a profound statement. Here is this kid grows up in a Christian home. He's screwing around with these girls, having intercourse with them. And what he has been brought up to be and what he is doing is in conflict. Mm. We call this in social science cognitive dissonance. Right. It has to be resolved.
Right.
There are two ways of resolving it. One, you change your behavior and bring it in conformity with your convictions. The other is get rid of your convictions. You have chosen the latter. You made a decision, and I think I know why. Now, I said most people are skeptics because of disobedience. Maybe that's not your case. Hmm. Can you tell me why you made this decision? He said, "I'd rather not go into it in front of this audience."
Really?
Know? Yeah, which is an honest statement, because I'm saying I was brought up in it. He said I made a decision. We are all deciding creatures. I guess I'm an existentialist in that respect.
Okay, Dr. Tony Campolo, ask me the same question. I want the same dialogue that you had with that kid, and here's how it goes. Are you doubting the existence of God because of sin in your life? My answer? Probably has something to do with it. I've never been able to shake sin. I can rationalize, that's probably not the right word, but I can, theologically, I can look at that and go, perfection is not what we're talking about here.
I picked on him because I could look at him, I could smell it.
Yeah.
You know.
So with me.
But with you, it could be this. You may have decided, and this is only a speculation.
Yeah.
You may have decided against God simply because you don't want to face up to the serious changes in your life that would have to take place if you believed in God and took God seriously. It would change you. If you made a decision to believe in God If you made a decision to take God seriously, then in fact, what would happen to you? How would your life be different than it is right now? Would you have to go another route in what you're doing with your life? Real faith does change the direction of your life. Incidentally, let me tell you a good story. It's story time.
It's story time.
It's Uncle Tony's storytelling hour. You all know the story of Blondin, the great tightrope walker. That's a famous Canadian story.
Yes, it is.
The guy that strung the tightrope across the Niagara Falls, I think it was 1898, and inched his way from the Canadian side to the American side.
You were five at the time, I think.
Yeah, that's right. Why? Blessed are ye, says the scripture, when they persecute you, when they say all manner of evil against you falsely. Rejoice and be exceeding glad. Great will be your reward in heaven. That's what it says in the book.
Yes.
Okay. Blondin inches his way to the American side. 10,000 people greet him, yelling his name, Blondin, Blondin, Blondin. He quiets the crowd, as you know in the story, and says, do you believe I can carry someone on my shoulders and go back to the Canadian side? They all yell, we believe, we believe. Who will be that person? A guy by the name of Henry Caldwell climbed on his shoulders, and he made his way back. But when they came to the middle, where there were no supporting wires holding the tightrope tight, and it was swaying, here's what Henry Caldwell reported. That Blondin said to him, Henry, you can't be Henry anymore. You have to be Blondin. When I sway, you sway. When I move, you move. You must be totally surrendered to me, and you must not move without me. Whoa, that'll preach. If you get to that point where, in fact, you know, and this may be the point, that you know, if you make a commitment to believe in God, that your whole life is going to change, and you may not want to change. Most people don't.
Okay, stop for a second.
Okay.
Gee whiz.
Jeez, I get to,
Whose show is this?
Hey, what's your name? You didn't tell me your name.
Tim.
Tim. Is he under conviction? Look at his face. Is he under conviction? The guy, tears are running down his cheeks.
Yeah.
He wants to fall to his knees, but he can't because he's got to stand in front of the microphone.
Okay.
He's under conviction.
I got to tell you, like, to have Drew tongue-tied is not very often. And
okay, my tongue is about to become untied, so
here we go.
So 30 years. I mean, I originally bought into Jesus because it was a Friday night at a Christian camp, and I knew that I'd get hugs from girls and an ice cream cone. All right?
Whoa.
All right?
But just as I am, you came down just as you are and went out just as you were.
Yeah, thank you very much. So 30 years later,
here
right? It's been
are.
30 years.
Yeah.
I've gone through all sorts of things. I've gone through the legalistic time period where I wanted to burn my albums because they had backward masking and I only listened to Keith Green. You know, that whole deal. I only went to
that
Christian
may have been the beginning of the end for you, right there. When you turned away from Keith Green, that was the beginning of your spiritual
the
destruction.
The dude couldn't fly a plane. I mean, come on.
Okay, go.
Okay, so then we come into maybe a season of letting some of that go and trying to become real. But I've been trained up in all the healing ministry things and the Neil Anderson, Freedom of Christ stuff, LL, all the. I went for all that wacky stuff. And then I was a pastor.
Wacky. I don't know. I don't make judgments.
I am so sick of judgmental. I know. There's no question
okay.
that. They actually took me on as a pastor in Australia for 5 years up in the Blue Mountains.
That'll do it, man.
Yeah. And now I've been doing the show, and what I've been trying to model in the show is vulnerability, authenticity, teachability, right? And so I sit down and I start to do this research on Ravi Zacharias, and it takes me back to my Josh McDowell apologetics days where I was eating that stuff up. Apologetics. Man, I was Mr. Apologetics. I put Kirk Cameron and Ray Comfort in his banana to shame. As I thought about it, I thought, man, it just hit me. It came out of nowhere. It was an ambush where I went 30 years.
Yeah.
Once a week, at least, I would write a letter to God, prayer. My wife has known me for a lot of those years, and she says, this is not new for you, dude. You've been struggling with this and asking God for this, that, and the other. I mean, I've asked, people say, well, you have not because you've asked. Oh, come on. I've asked till the cows come home, and all that's happened is the cows came home.
Yeah.
That's it. So where is the tangent? Is it a wrong question? I want an encounter with God. Is that a wrong question?
No, it's not. And what's more is, the very fact that you want an encounter with God is an incredibly wonderful thing.
Who doesn't want that?
Well, a lot of people who are screwing around don't want an encounter with God.
Oh, yeah, because that'd be bad timing.
Yeah, that would, you know, you don't want to, before you climb into bed with the chick, you don't want to God look and say, oh, I'm seeing you. You know, you want to get rid of God in certain circumstances. Yeah. No, I think, you've been playing this game so long that you know a lot of the stuff that I could say.
Yeah.
Like Augustine's, you would not seek him had you not already found him. Where does this desire to find God come from? Why do you even care? What is it within you that's driving you to ask this question over and over again? I mean, why don't you just drop it and move on? You got a problem, kid.
Oh, thanks, Tips.
No, I mean, that's a very... Augustine would ask that question. Yeah. Why do you seek him if you have not already found him? What is it within you that is driving you to ask this question over and over again?
Sorry, I'm giving him a signal to turn your mic down. Oh, yeah, you're so stinking loud.
Because I'm an advanced...
What's your ethnic background that you're
Italian,
this
Italian, Italian. Tony Campolo. Hey, you don't mess with me. This is one of the few cities in the world where I feel at home.
Yeah.
There are more Italians here than there is in Rome.
That's right.
I feel at home here.
Okay.
You're not Italian, are you?
No, Irish.
That's your problem. Yeah. If you were Italian, you'd believe.
Listen, you've actually brought up something which is so simple that it's profound, that where did this... Are you saying it's impossible for someone to thirst for God unless God puts the thirst in? That sounds like a Bible answer for mankind question.
I think it's in every human being.
Right. The scripture says
he's the light
set eternity in man's heart and all this kind of stuff. Okay.
You say that so flippantly.
Well, because...
But there is something in you that is driving you to ask this question. I mean,
why can't he answer the prayer?
One of the nice things I like about you is that you're asking the question sincerely. Generally, when I deal with college and university students, they're just a bunch of wise kids.
Yeah.
I was going to say wise.
Yeah, you know. I got that.
But, and I just say, do I have to put up with this crap?
Yeah.
But I think that you are on this show for one reason, and I think it's very important that you be on this show and that you not capitulate to arguments like mine, and that you're giving voice to a whole lot of people out there who have gone through the same thing that you're going through.
Dare I say the majority?
No, I don't think so. George Santayana at Harvard once said this, people do not reject God. They simply bid him a fond farewell. Hmm. It kind of slips out of their lives. And then one day they wake up and say, I don't believe anymore. It's not there anymore. Most of the apologetics that I hear, and you mentioned those who make arguments, generally tell me why, without God, there are all kinds of problems. Who legitimates morality? Who gives meaning to life? They can give me 50 good reasons why we need God. One of my colleagues at the University of Pennsylvania, where I taught for 10 years, perhaps the most brilliant social theorist of the time, Philip Reeve, said, Doctor, to me, he called me doctor.
Wow.
Not you, but he called me doctor.
No, I'm not going to.
Doctor, he said, I'm not going to argue with you. There's no question that we need God. The fact that we need God doesn't mean that there is a God.
Exactly.
Exactly. So after you say, without God, there's no meaning. Without God, there is no hope. Fine. Maybe life is without meaning and without hope of eternity. Maybe all these things are true. Maybe we have to face death scared. Maybe these are the realities. Maybe and Nietzsche said the same thing. He said, if there is no God, humanity would have to create one. Wow,
sure,
that's
sure.
heavy.
But here's the deal. When I really imagined or allowed myself to imagine, see, I'm now at a stage in life where I got a 21 and an 18-year-old, so I'm not believing in God because I want to raise a Christian family anymore. Same way that I'm not married because of the kids. I'm married because I want to be married. Big difference. Big difference in the outlook on both those things. So I'm at this stage now where I'm going, okay, whoa, hold on a second here. Is this real? Is it not real? Is it real? Is it not real?
Let me just add. Let me add.
There can be no gaps with you,
Ken. Let me add.
Yes.
There it is. I don't go in for the apologetic thing because I don't think it convinces anybody. But if ever there was a case for apologetics, it's right now. Namely, that one has to come up with some explanation for the Big Bang in the first place. And what existed before the Big Bang?
Dude, I'm not smart enough to even wade in
that
territory.
Well, then don't. Well, you got to do that. because what I am saying is that you cannot dismiss God on intellectual grounds. You cannot do that.
Okay, but I'm not. But I'm dismissing him on
experiential,
on relational grounds.
That's good.
That's where I'm dismissing
him. That's right. That's right. And here's the answer to that that I always gave to my students. Always gave to my students. And it's Dostoevsky's answer from Brothers Karamazov. To not believe in God is to not believe in certain people. The stupid ones. The evil ones. The people who you would soon have removed from the planet. But the reality is that guys like you, in spite of all your protests, look at another human being and sense something infinitely precious in that person. Something, here's the word, sacred. I always argued with my students that the only place that they could really find God for sure, there are many ways, but there's only one way, place you can find God for sure. That God is waiting to be encountered in the other. That's what Martin Buber, the Jewish philosopher, said. That there is a sacred presence in other persons. And when you, sometimes when I look into a person's eyes and reach into the depths of his or her being, I connect with something which is transcendent.
Didn't work for Mother Teresa.
It didn't work for her. And that's because she didn't look the way I look. And I'm not sure that she was right and I am right. All I can do is give testimony to myself.
But what you're saying is if you just hang out with the least of these and serve the least of these.
No, I didn't say serve the least of these.
What?
Most of the service that I see going on in the least of these, because I work in Haiti and in inner city situations, and there are all these mission groups come down, and they always come back with tears running down their cheeks saying, oh, this did so much for me. It really lifted me up. It changed my whole perspective. Fine, me. Charlie, it's not about you. It's about them. They're hungry. They're dying. And you're saying, I had a great experience down there. The truth is, I wonder how much service in the name of the church is simply egoistic self-gratification. I mean, I have to raise that issue because it ought to be raised. But let me just say this. I have had encounters. Let me give you one. I'm walking down Chestnut Street in Philadelphia. And there's this. Did I tell you this story? I think I did. Yeah. Well, if I didn't, I'll tell you.
I'll stop you if you've told me.
Don't stop me, because it's a good story. And it bears being told again.
All right.
And half of your people who listened last week said, I'm never going to listen to that guy again.
No.
So I got a whole new audience, okay. Understand? People who accidentally dialed and said, I don't know who the host is, but his guest is absolutely fascinating.
Man, is that Mr. Stravopoulos?
Oh, wow. So, but I'm walking down Chestnut Street, and there's this bum coming towards me. I don't call him a bum. I call him a homeless man. He's dirty, filthy.
Or a lawyer.
A lawyer's walking down the street, steps in a dog mess. Steps in the dog mess. The lawyer looks down at the dog mess and says, oh, dear God, I'm melting. I thought I'd just throw that. I mean. Well, it wasn't that good.
Oh, no, goodness. That was good.
Yeah, that was good. That was good.
Okay. So it's,
would you stay on topic?
Okay. So this guy's got filthy, dirty. He's crazy. He's yelling out at people who aren't there. Hey, yo, yelling. You've seen these people.
Yeah.
They're on Yonge Street.
They're at Vineyard, too.
Oh, look. How dare you? You judgmental. But, you know, and he's got this cup of McDonald's coffee in his hand, and it's smudged around the edge. Filthy, dirty guy. He spots me. He goes, yo, mister, you want some of my coffee? I didn't really want any of his coffee.
Mm.
But the right thing to do was to affirm his generosity. So I took the cup, and I took a sip, and I gave it back to him. And I said, hey, you're getting generous, giving away your coffee to people you don't even know. You don't even know me. You're giving away your coffee to a stranger. He said, well, the coffee today was especially delicious. And I figure if God gives you something good, you ought to share it with people. I thought, oh, God, this is going to cost me $10. I said, you want something from me, don't you? You've set me up. What do you want from me? He says, I want a hug. I was hoping for the $10. I got to tell you. So he puts his arms around me. I put my arms around him, and people are passing, and they're staring at me, and I'm embarrassed. And little by little, I felt the embarrassment turn to awe and reverence. and I heard a voice within myself, which I knew to be the voice of Jesus, saying, I was hungry, did you feed me? Naked, did you clothe me? I was the bum you met on Chestnut Street. Did you hug me? And that was a sacred moment. That was a moment of spiritual reality. I can't give you any, you know, you can call it psychological, you can call it a sociological conditioning, you can call it anything you want. All I know is I felt what Rudolf Otto calls a sense of the holy in my arms. Whoa, that's what I'm talking about.
Well, as we draw this conversation to a close...
Shall we do it with a hymn? You sing Just As I Am. And I will say, friends, this program cannot continue without your free will support.
Yeah, thank you.
Will you please send your gifts to Joy 1250, Catch the Spirit. And today, Drew Marshall will send you a prayer handkerchief that will remove pimples. And if you really have serious problems, will remove hemorrhoids. Send your gift today before this program's over. And we will take care of you. Gratefully and joyfully.
That was a lovely moment. Thank you. I don't think I can recover from
that. Can we have him on every week?
No, because then it'll become his show. He's always about the hostile takeover. He's Italian. He's used to that.
Yeah, that's right.
Okay, look, my deal is this. It's the soldier overseas for 30 years, writing the letter to the father back home, not getting anything back. His buddies go overseas, run into his father. Hey, your father's awesome. Oh, I think he loves me. And there's still a disconnect relationally, right? Yeah. And what isn't doing it anymore for me is rumors of glory,
yep.
Other people's stories, passive revelation.
Yep.
Nature or, you know, through people, tribal conditioning.
Yep.
So what I've done, and this might be wrong, but what I've done, and I don't know whether I did it intentionally or unintentionally, subconsciously or consciously, but over the last number of years, I have stripped away the tribal conditioning. Because I want to be able to strip it away and know if what I believe is really real. And I don't think I can know whether what I believe is really real unless I take away the tribal conditioning. So the spiritual disciplines or the fellowshipping together and singing erotic love songs to Jesus. I'm just not doing that anymore.
Yeah, well, let me just conclude on this note. The reality is that you don't have to worry about it. God believes in you even if you don't believe in him. That's number one. Mm. That's the first thing you need to grapple with. The second thing is, you are very close to being an Old Testament prophet, whether you like it or not. The first thing that an Old Testament prophet
does...
Should
I go and buy me some lions?
No. The first thing that an Old Testament prophet does is comes in with a sledgehammer and smashes all the false idols. What you're saying, and what you said pretty dramatically in the last statement of yours, is you have been applying the sledgehammer to all the false idols that you had been worshiping and calling Jesus. And before you can ever come to grips with the reality, you've got to get rid of the false idols. Mm. You're halfway there, Drew. I hate to say it. You're not far away. You're probably closer than you've ever been before. Because before you can come to grips with the reality, you've got to get rid of false reality. Before you can come to grips with God, you've got to get rid of the false gods. And all that stuff that you ticked off are false gods that have deluded many people, not just you, many people. And when all of that's torn away, they think that's the end. That's not the end. And here's where the last word comes in. There's a word called grace. Whether God finds you or not. Note, I didn't say whether you find God. Yeah, yeah. The last guy said, you got to keep seeking God. It's not about that. It's about grace. Namely, it comes to you when you least expect it. If you read C.S. Lewis's life, he gets on a motorcycle at a pub, and halfway between the pub and his house, it hits him. He wrote a book called Surprise by Joy, and that's what will happen. Nobody's going to argue. You've been there and back. You've heard the doctrines. You've heard the teachings. If you think you're going to get some smart intellectual in here, which I am not, to lay a trip on you, and you'll say, oh, I'm so glad you came. No, it's not going to happen. I can't do what in the grace of God. That's what the word grace means. You get it undeserved. I was talking to a group of junior high kids, and I was trying to talk about God's justice and mercy and grace. And I said, do you even understand what I'm talking about? One kid said, yeah, junior high kid. If you're speeding... And really speeding, and a cop pulls you over and gives you a ticket. That's justice. If he gives you a warning, that's mercy. But if you're speeding and the cop pulls you over and he gives you a Krispy Kreme donut, that's grace. And I thought, that's, I can use that story. It comes as an unexpected gift. Please remember that Bible that you have all kinds of questions about declares it as that. It's a gift. You're saved by grace through faith. Saved by grace. But until you receive the grace, and it's a gift. And I can't give it to you. You can't give it to yourself.
Well, a good friend, Brexy Cavey, teacher of the Meeting House, has been tweeting with me back and forth online. He's trying to talk me off a ledge. And we've just been having some public discourse about this. It's been very interesting. And he keeps saying to me, the way to God is through Jesus. You will find out whether God is real with Jesus. So start with Jesus. Start with. And I get that, right? Yeah. But I'm saying, before I reinvest in Jesus...
Yeah.
I want to know there's a God.
Yeah.
So I'm trying to develop a doctrine of doubt.
Turn it around the other way. Instead of talking about God, let's just talk about Jesus, this historical figure. Okay?
Okay.
Let's just talk about him. Is there anything that you can think about of God that you don't find in Jesus? Is there any quality of being that you would look for in God that you don't find in Jesus?
I wish he was a little more smitey with the Pharisees. That'd be good if he just took them out a little bit. Yeah.
I don't think God hates the Pharisees quite as much as you do. You see, you're still mad at the Pharisees that did a job on you as you were growing up.
Yeah,
see, God doesn't hate the Pharisees. Okay. He loves the Pharisees.
Okay.
You see, he loves me, which is even worse than the Pharisees.
Mm.
The reality is there anything you can say about God that you would not say about Jesus? Forgiving, loving, empathetic, merciful, gracious, compassionate. All the words are there. Okay, got that over here?
Yeah.
Now, let's talk about psychology and Abraham Maslow's concept of the self-actualized human being. What would it be? Merciful, forgiving, intensely caring. And you say, wait a minute. What you say about the self-actualized human being is the same thing as you say about Jesus, which is the same thing you say about God. Exactly. Jesus is God, not in spite of the fact that he was human, but because he was human and the only human being that ever lived. He is the embodiment of all that we crave for in humanity. And in that respect, ideologically, that doesn't solve the problem for you, but ideologically, when I look at Jesus, I say, is there anything about God that isn't in him? No wonder Paul writes, in him was the fullness of God revealed. There isn't anything you can say about God that you can't say about Jesus. What's more is, there isn't anything you can say about Jesus that you can't say about the self-actualized human being. And so, in fact, salvation is not getting ready for the next world. It's being humanized into the fullness of the stature of who Jesus is.
Dr. Tony Campolo, when I was a teenager, you rocked my world. You continue to do it. There's only been two guys that have gotten through this thick skull as good as you and Mike Iaconelli. We no longer got Mike.
Yeah.
We still got you.
He was my closest friend. I had his funeral. We loved each other. Hmm. Let me give you one story on Mike because it's worth telling. I don't know whether it's in his book, Messy Spirituality, or not. Did you read that book?
Yeah, many times.
But he has a story about this deacon who, I think it's in that book, who didn't do much around the church. He was a deacon that didn't deek. So Mike said, look, we need somebody to drive the van full with kids to the old folks' home to do the worship service one Sunday afternoon a month. Will you do that? So the guy does. He's standing in the back while the kids are up front doing their thing. This guy in a wheelchair rolls the wheelchair over, grabs Iaconelli's hand, and holds it tightly. The next week, when they go back, same thing happens. Guy in a wheelchair rolls over, grabs the deacon's hand, holds it tightly. The next month it happens. Then the guy isn't there. He asks the nurse, oh, he's dying. He may not live out the day, maybe certainly not the week. Can I see him? Yeah, but he's unconscious. He goes down the hall. There's this guy with tubes out of his mouth and wires.
Just the wheelchair guy, the deacon?
Yeah, the wheelchair guy. Yeah, he's lying there in bed. Yeah. The deacon goes over, takes the guy's hand, and prays. dear God, forgive his sins, receive him into the kingdom, bless him, give him peace as he makes his transition to the next world. When he finishes, the old guy squeezes the deacon's hand. This dying man squeezes the deacon's hand three times tightly. The guy's so moved, he stumbles out with tears running down his cheeks. He bumps into this middle-aged woman who says, he's been waiting for you. He said he didn't want to die until he had the chance to hold the hand of Jesus one more time. And I kept on telling my senile father, in the next world, you'll get to hold the hand. He said, no, once a month, Jesus comes and holds my hand. And I don't want to die until I get a chance to do that again. In a sense, that's the only convincing that can happen, is when you come into contact with people for whom Jesus was real. And Mike Iaconelli was a guy for whom Jesus was real. And when you met him, he was the argument, not anything he said. There was something so authentic about the presence of Christ in him. He was Jesus for people. So I'm glad you brought him up.
Yeah. Yeah, me too. Me too. All right, you've taken more than your fair share of time
here
on the show. And just before we say goodbye to you, you are speaking tonight.
Yes.
At the fundraiser for New Direction. Wendy Gritter's in the house here, sitting quietly in the studio. Must be hard for you.
Where will that be, Wendy?
It'll be over at King's College, but I can. It's kind of done. You can't be turning up last minute, can you?
I can join live streaming.
Right, okay. So tell us a little bit about that real quick.
Yeah, we're at a full house at King's Christian Collegiate in Oakville, but you can join us online through our live video stream at www.relevantengagement.ca, relevantengagement.ca. Join us that way and tweet in your questions and comments for Dr. Campolo.
Wow.
Whoa.
Celeb.
Oh.
Well done. Well done. Folks, thank you for bearing with me as I air out my messy baggage all over the airwaves. I do appreciate your patience. If you're wanting to catch more of this Drugal discussion with various Drugal guests, again, Drugal being Drew's search for God, you can go to our website, drewmarshall.ca, click on Drugal, there it is. There's a Twitter discussion called Tweet Me Off, and that goes on between Paul Young, who wrote The Shack, Brexy Cavey from The Meeting House, author of End of Religion. So I've been accused of maybe you're just doing this for listenership or whatever, but as I've said to many people, we're doing it publicly because for a couple of reasons. One, nobody else is, and two, I'm trying to develop this doctrine of doubt, and I really want to stay open to other people's thoughts and opinions. I know I sound like I treat some people's response to this tritely, but I'm trying. I really am. So anyway, if you want to listen to our conversation we had today with Dr. Campolo, we'll post that up later this week on our Drugal page. Wendy Hagen, child star, author, and passionate mom, joins us next. You might remember her from Wonder Years or Growing Pains or The New Lassie. And then Dr. Sharon Baker, she's the author of Raising Hell, rethinking everything you've been taught about God's wrath and judgment. We'll be right back. Stay with us.
Like what you've heard? Listen again online at drewmarshall.ca.
Maybe you've been thinking about advertising your organization on the radio, but don't really have the budget for a long-term marketing campaign? Well, what if we gave you a show? The Drew Marshall Show is currently offering an innovative advertising concept for the small business owner or charity. With web stats and listenership at an all-time high, Canada's most listened to spiritual talk show is offering you an opportunity to partner with us, one show at a time. Consider sponsoring one show and we'll introduce you to our listening audience for the day. Drew will mention your organization every hour during our four-hour show, including a live phone interview. We'll also post your logo and website link on our website for an entire month. If you're thinking about promoting a special event, product, or upcoming sale, or if you just want to test the radio advertising waters without a huge investment, then consider becoming a one-day advertising partner with The Drew Marshall Show. Go to drewmarshall.ca for details or call Joy 1250 on 905-845-2821, extension 367. That's 905-845-2821, extension 367.